Chapter 23. Rita was not home yet when I arrived, since I'd gotten there a bit early as a result of my explosive misfortune. The house seemed very empty, and I stood inside the front door for a minute, just listening to the unnatural silence. A pipe ticked in the back of the house, and then the air conditioner came on. But these were not living sounds, and I still felt as if I had stumbled into a movie where everyone else had been whisked away in a spaceship. The lump on my head was still throbbing, and I was very tired and very alone. I went to the couch and fell onto it as if I suddenly had no bones left to hold me up. I lay there for some time in a kind of strange interval in the urgency. I knew I still had to explode into action, track down Weiss, head him off at the pass, and beard him in his den. But for some reason, I was completely unable to move, and the mean little voice that had been urging me on didn't sound terribly convincing at the moment, as if it, too, needed a coffee break. So I just lay there, face down, trying to feel the sense of emergency that had deserted me, and failing to feel anything except, as mentioned, fatigue and pain. And if somebody had shouted at me, "Look out behind you! He's got a gun!" I would have replied with no more than a weary mumble, "Tell him to take a number and wait." I woke up, I don't know how much later, to an overwhelming sense of blue, which made no sense at all until I was able to focus my eyes. And there stood Cody, no more than 6 inches away from my head, in his apparently brand-new Cub Scout uniform. I sat up, which caused my head to clang like a gong, and looked at him. "Well," I said, "you certainly look official."
"Look stupid," he said. "Shorts."
I looked at him in his dark blue shirt and shorts, the little hat perched on the top of his head, and the neckerchief in its slide around his neck, and it didn't seem fair to pick on the shorts. "What's wrong with shorts?" I said. "You wear shorts all the time."
"Uniform shorts," he said,
as if it was some kind of impossible assault on the last frontier of human dignity. "Lots of people wear uniform shorts," I said, desperately flinging my battered brain through its paces in search of an example. Cody looked very doubtful.
"Who?"
he said. "Well, the mailman wears shorts." I broke off quickly. The look he was giving me was louder and more pointed than anything he could have said. "And, the British soldiers wore shorts in India," I said, with incredibly feeble hope. He stared at me for a moment longer without saying anything, as if I had let him down badly when all the chips were on the table. And before I could think of another brilliant example, Rita came charging into the room.
"Oh, Cody, you didn't wake him up, did you?"
"Hello, Dexter.
We've been shopping. We got all the things Cody needs for the Cub Scouts. He doesn't like the shorts, I think because Aster said something."
"My God, what happened to your head?"
she said, running through 2 octaves and 8 emotions without breathing.
"It's nothing," I said. "Just a flesh wound."
Which was something I'd always wanted to say, even though I didn't really know what that meant. Weren't all wounds flesh wounds, unless they bypassed the flesh somehow and went right to the bone? Nevertheless, Rita responded with a gratifying circus of concern, shooing away Cody and Aster and getting me an ice pack, a comforter, and a cup of tea before flinging herself down beside me on the couch and demanding to know what had happened to my poor dear head. I filled her in on all the dreadful details, leaving out 1 or 2 things with no real relevance, like what I had been doing at the house that blew up in an attempt to kill me, and, as I spoke, I watched with dismay as her eyes got big and moist until they began to overflow and tears ran down her cheeks and across her face. It was really quite flattering to think that minor damage to my skull could cause such a display of hydrotechnics, but at the same time, it left me slightly uneasy about what my response ought to be. Luckily for my reputation as a method actor,
Rita left me in no doubt at all about how I should behave.
"You stay right here and rest," she said. "Quiet and rest when you get a bump on the head like that. I'm going to make you some soup."
I hadn't known that soup was good for concussions, but Rita seemed very sure about it, and with a few gentle strokes on my face and a light kiss near the bump, she was off the couch and into the kitchen, where she immediately began a muted clatter that very soon smelled like garlic, onion, and then chicken, and I drifted into a state of half-sleep where even the faint throbbing of my head seemed distant, cozy, and almost pleasant. I wondered if Rita would bring me soup if I was arrested. I wondered if Weiss had anyone to bring him soup. I hoped not. I was starting to dislike him, and he certainly didn't deserve soup. Astor suddenly appeared beside the couch, interrupting my reverie.
"Mom says you got hit on the head," she said.
"Yes, that's right," I said.
"Can I see it?"
she asked, and I was so deeply touched by her concern that I bowed my head to reveal the lump and the matted hair around it where it had bled.
"It doesn't look so bad," she said,
sounding a little disappointed.
"It isn't," I told her. "So you're not going to die, are you?" she asked politely.
"Not yet," I said. "Not until after you do your homework." She nodded, glanced toward the kitchen, and said,
"I hate math."
Then she wandered away down the hall, presumably to hate her math at closer range. I drifted a while longer. The soup finally came, and while I would not absolutely insist that it was good for my head injury, it certainly did me no harm. As I may have mentioned before, Rita in the kitchen can do things that are far beyond mortal ken, and after a big portion of her chicken soup, I began to think that the world at large might deserve one last chance. She fussed over me the whole time, which was not really my favorite thing, but at the moment it seemed kind of soothing, and I let her fluff the pillows, mop my brow with a cool cloth, and rub my neck when the soup was all gone. Before too long, the entire evening had passed, and Cody and Astor came in to say muted goodnights. Rita herded them away to bed and tucked them in, and I staggered down the hall to the bathroom to brush my teeth. Just as I got the toothbrush going in a really good rhythm, I caught sight of myself in the mirror over the sink. My hair stuck up in all directions. There was a bruise on one cheek, and the normal, sprightly emptiness of my eyes seemed hollow. I looked like a very unflattering mugshot, the kind where the recently arrested is still sobering up and trying to figure out what he did and how he got caught. I hoped it was not an omen of what was to come. In spite of an evening of nothing more strenuous than lounging on the couch and dozing, I was nearly overwhelmed with sleepiness, and the toothbrushing had taken the last of my energy. Still, I made it all the way to the bed under my own power, and I flopped down onto the pillows, thinking that I would just drift off into slumberland and worry about everything else in the morning. But alas, Rita had other plans.